Hey everyone, this is John.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is a Super Nintendo version of the Nintendo Show, in which we just kind of talk about Super Nintendo games, sort of semi-chronologically. There was nothing really that came out in February of 94 super noteworthy, but we do have a couple of games that, one of them at least, doesn't have a really well-defined release date. But before we actually jump into those, I just wanted to mention real quick that all three Donkey Kong Country games became available on Thursday for the Wii U Virtual Console.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So yeah, you can download all of those. In the past...
I mean, for me, that's a top three. That first Donkey Kong is probably one of the, my three favorite games ever made for the console.
I don't know where it would land for me, but yeah, it's definitely one that's noteworthy and excellent and worth a download if you don't already have a copy of it.
Yeah.
It's a little strange... Nintendo's offering like a deal, a discount on Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, which is also an excellent game. If you buy one of the Virtual Console games, you get like a $15 discount on Tropical Freeze or something like that, which is a pretty sweet deal. In the past, what at least Capcom did with the Final Fight games is if they release all three Final Fights on the Super Nintendo on the same day for the Virtual Console, and if you bought... all three of them, you'd basically get one of them for free. So you get three for the price of two. And it would be kind of cool if they did that with this as well. But, you know, they offered something, which I guess is pretty cool. So, anyway, let's move on into the main event. Let's start with NBA Jam.
Okay.
And the other game, I might as well say now, is going to be Captain America and the Avengers. And NBA Jam, actually, I was able to find a release date for that one. Actually, it turned out to be March of 1994, which is... No, it is currently March as we're recording this, so it's appropriate.
That it is.
So
today's
NBA
the very first day of March.
Yes.
As we record.
Sure is. So, NBA Jam.
It's kind of a known commodity. I feel like we're not really going to be educating too many people on what NBA Jam actually is. I feel like at some point, everybody's played this game in some way.
Started out as an arcade game. A year later, got ported to a lot of consoles. Really, if you've played it once, you know exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Because everything's very surface level. The first thing I have written in my notes here, it's kind of the Mortal Kombat of basketball games.
Yeah.
So, it's a bit shallow. And
Who released this, by the way?
Acclaim.
Acclaim? Okay.
Yeah. And developed by... they were called Iguana Entertainment at the time. So, it is, in a lot of ways, a dunk simulator.
Yeah.
Because all of the playable characters, all of the basketball players do the same dunks, and there's really no way to execute your specific dunks, and no really other strategy in the game other than do a lot of dunks, get yourself on fire, and lob up some threes, and just run up the score as much as possible. So, a lot like Mortal Kombat, there's not really much difference between your animation dunks between different players. There's not really a whole lot of character models for your player here. There's four or five different character models, and then like different skin tones for like there might be like one or two white players. So Chris Mullin's got to be in there somewhere.
he is there. He is on the Pacers. I mean, well, you know, and most of my reference is going to be from NBA Hangtime, which I think is
which is a
ramped up version.
Yeah,
of,
absolutely.
And we'll talk about that when we're done with talking about NBA Jam.
Yeah, that
that's the game we should be talking about.
It's with NBA Hangtime is within the same series, and that's when like. It really starts to get some depth to it. But like the four or five different character models, there's characters that like, there's two different heights. You're either short or you're tall.
Yeah.
So there's not really much emphasis into making unique character models or even unique character statistics. You do have individual player stats. They're not very meaningful because just about anyone can dunk. And as long as you're dunking, lobbing up the threes, you'll be fine. You can really play as whoever you want and have some success, which... Why wouldn't you play as the Bulls?
Yeah.
They were clearly the best team all around. They had Pippen and Grant on the team. And Pippen might as well have been the Michael Jordan of the game because almost all of his stacks were maxed out.
Well, I remember kind of the great teams of that era were like them. And I remember specifically for this, the Sonics had a beast team because they had
Sonics were good.
Kemp
and Payton. Gary Payton. The Charlotte Hornets at the time.
They had Larry Johnson, right?
Yeah, and Alonzo Mourning, so they had a pretty good team.
That's a good team right there.
The Orlando Magic had Scott Skiles and I believe Nick...
D3? Or Nick Anderson. It would be Nick Anderson, yeah.
So they were pretty pathetic.
Reggie, well, we talked about the Pacers a second ago. Mullen and...
Actually, I think it was Mark Jackson. I don't think Reggie Miller was in the game until the tournament edition, which was released like a year later. And the tournament edition introduced like swappable players. You had three players to choose from on a roster as opposed to two. And like the Magic, you got Shaquille O'Neal, Avery Hardaway, and Nick Anderson. And actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I think once you go through like your arcade mode, I think you do have unlockable fourth players for the teams. Because I think D3 is in there for the Magic. But anyway, we digress. The original, the non-tournament edition of NBA Jam was a nearly identical port of the arcade game, which, as we mentioned before, came out in 1993. There was an exhibition mode, which supported up to four players. And there was a sort of season mode, is like an arcade mode, where you just play...
Just beat every single team? Or you play every single team until you beat them? And...
Yep, including the team that you are. Mm-hmm. And then like you always play the Bulls last because they're the best team.
Do they have a code system at the bottom to help you like change things up?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then that was really one of the big appeals about the game, was that code system. There are codes for things like Unlimited Turbo. Mm-hmm. There were codes for...
Oh, like the rooftop court, I think. I don't know if that, again, that's in Hang Time you can do that. It might not be in this.
This one, not that I recall, but there were definitely things, like you start a game on fire, the code's called Power Up Defense, which basically allowed you to goaltend.
Yeah.
But then, like, the real big one was, like, putting in your different player initials and entering a code to change your character skin. So there was, like, one for Bill Clinton, Al Gore, a little character called Air Dog. So... They don't have their own stats. They just kind of become a proxy for whatever players were on your team. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at the time, it's like, oh, this is silly and awesome. I'm playing as the president.
Are you as one, when you play, or like when you play NBA Jam, can you alternate between your two characters if you're playing by yourself?
Yeah.
Okay, so you can set yourself up for your lobs.
Yeah.
Do you have team fire, do you know?
No, it's just the individual player. Individual player fire when you're playing by yourself. So... The game did get, like we mentioned before, an update, an NBA Jam Tournament Edition. That's probably a game we'll be talking about at a later date. And the series did eventually get some actual depth to it with Hang Time. There's fun to be had with this game, even though it's pretty shallow. Playing with multiple people is pretty fun, but I feel like this is definitely a party game.
Yeah, good to play with other people. I don't know. I also feel like this is a complaint you can lobby about many of them. It's one of those games, sports games, that doesn't really do anything to accurately reflect the sport itself.
Right.
They could be playing anything. This could be any sport.
They could be playing polo.
We just like it because it's, you know, we're young and these are the basketball players we like.
Right. Right. And they get to do crazy dunks and there's those crazy catchphrases. It's a lot like Mortal Kombat where you watch like look at this awesome violence that we're executing.
And there is some strategy. Like, I know when I play, because I still play Hang Time a lot. I think Hang Time's a great game. But I play defensively oriented. I focus far more on defense, and the points come when they come. Like, it's pretty easy to generate points when you play. But shutting down your opponent and preventing them, that's what really ramps up your points.
The Hang Time, was that also a 2-on-2?
Yeah, 2-on-2. Okay. It's the exact same setup, but they just added so much more functionality to it.
They added, like, a creative player as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, a creative player. You can use your own initials to create your own character. You said there's two sizes for player. They actually edge up as the heights go up.
Okay.
The weights increase. You get to do your own stat distributions. Say if you wanted to make someone that was just really fast, pushed really hard, mm-hmm. and could shoot threes like a motherfucker. You can make that and then pair him up with just a good rebounder, blocker. And then you have your perfectly balanced, you know, Stockton Malone team.
Yep. So,
Oh, and you had team fire, which is the best part. So if you set somebody up for an alley-oop, as long as you do three setups in a row with alley-oops, your team goes on fire. And it doesn't end if your opponent makes a bucket. You just straight up get 30 seconds. And then a timer goes down. Yeah, so it's just the quickest, easiest way to generate points.
So, as long as we're on this tangent about other NBA games on the Super Nintendo, I think that probably the deepest one was probably NBA Live 95, mm-hmm. which is when EA got into like that the sports sort of simulator game, and that one had full rosters, character creation. You could do trades.
5-on-5.
Yeah, 5-on-5. You could do trades between teams. You could actually run plays. There were other things to take into account, things like fatigue. Mm-hmm. So you know, this...
There's a thing called free throws that happen when you play a game of basketball.
There's that.
It's a big part of the game,
there are rules. And in NBA Jam, it's worth mentioning, because that was also the other big part of the game, is you could just push players over, take the ball. And
no out of bounds, too. Someone flings the ball, it just hits this invisible wall, and then just drops to the corner.
Right, and then someone just goes and picks it up, and there you go. It keeps the clock continuously running, which is probably something that... Of course, they left in from the arcade version because it didn't change much, but something in the arcade version, like keep the clock running, because there were certain machines where when a quarter of the game ended, you would have to insert more money to keep playing, which is a huge con.
Yeah, because you want to play a full game. I mean, wasn't it the same with the NFL Blitz?
Yeah, I think
so. Where you basically just paid for quarters of the game rather than playing for an Intel. That's really cheap.
So... This game isn't really available on a download service. The cart is pretty cheap. You can get it for like $5 to $10 on Amazon, which...
That's nothing.
Yeah, that's not too bad, so...
But I mean, ultimately, like...
You can do better.
Yeah, you can do better with other Jam titles. Yeah, so I'm going to go back to get the original one.
Right. So let's move over to Captain America and the Avengers, which is a side-scrolling beat-em-up game, not unlike some of the X-Men games or Final Fight, starring Captain America, of course, and then Iron Man, Hawkeye, and the character Vision. And
Everyone's favorite.
Right, he's the star, really.
Yeah.
I think it's... at least worthwhile to explore where that particular franchise was at the time during the mid-90s. There was an Iron Man cartoon TV show. I don't remember if you ever saw that.
I don't think so.
It was pretty bad.
Yeah.
I don't really remember much about Captain America or any of the other Avengers having any sort of Saturday morning cartoon presence. But these were kind of the B squad. There were a lot of pretty good Spider-Man and X-Men games in the 16-bit generation. But Captain America, any of the Avenger characters, they were probably not treated with the same license care as some of the other ones, which is saying something because it was kind of the Wild West of licensing.
Yeah.
We talked about it before, how there are two different versions of Jurassic Park. Like, it was just whatever. Like, oh, you want to make a game with this? Fine, go.
Yeah.
So, I think this one was developed by Data East, who does not have the best pedigree when it comes to developing 16-bit games. But let's jump right into the meat of it. What were your impressions?
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's pretty bare bones. Doesn't look particularly good. Doesn't handle well. Doesn't do anything well. Backgrounds are bland and boring. The color palette's a little unrefined, not very clearly detailed.
Yep.
Sprites are small. It reminds me a lot, and I wouldn't say it's as bad as it, but it does remind me a lot of that Double Dragon Battletoads crossover game.
I'm a little torn because I think in some ways it's worse. Because
Tell them about the controls. What are the three things you do?
You attack, you jump, and you punch.
Of course, because punching is not because
you both attack and punch.
And
the punch is so fucking useless.
Why don't they call it projectile? Because that's essentially what it is.
Right.
It's a projectile or a charge.
Or your power, something like that.
Yeah.
And it costs nothing. There's no economy to it. So you can just spam your projectile attack over and over again, which is the best thing to do because the punch is useless because if you punch someone, they're going to be invincible long enough just to counter you. So you got to punch and run.
That's the thing, yeah. And this is so far along and Super Nintendo side-scrollers, if you've ever played another one before, you feel like you should be comboing.
Right.
Like there should be combos, and they don't. And in fact, they can chain hit you pretty easily, it seems. But you can't. So you basically have to go in there, get him with a punch, and then immediately run away.
And it's unbelievable that they got that so wrong. Yeah. Because when you're designing, mm-hmm. you're in the planning phase of a side-scrolling beat-em-up. Like, okay, what are the core mechanics of the game? You walk up to guys and punch them.
Yeah.
Like, and how do you ruin that? By making it impossible to punch them twice.
By punch dodge. You punch dodge all the time.
Yep. And it's ridiculous.
And there's parts of the game, even on the first level, where four enemies come out at once.
Yeah.
Having to deal with that against four things at the same time in a one player. We're playing two players, so at least it's a little bit easier, but that's gotta be so frustrating and infuriating. It's not like it's good gameplay.
It takes so damn long to kill a group of three enemies as when you're playing one player, and it's not like it's easy to get away from them either, because they are just as fast, if not faster, than you.
You can jump really. You can pretty much do one jump and get across the stage. That's nice and all, but it's not going to help you.
But by the time
and try and fight anything.
Yeah, but by the time you turn around, they're on top of you. So you gotta quick fire a projectile or throw a punch and move away. And some of these enemies are taking 3-4 hits to dispatch.
Yeah.
So it's actually kind of funny that some of the mini bosses are tougher than just the regular grunts that you run into in the game.
Yeah.
So. And the bosses themselves follow similar patterns, except they give them projectile attacks as well, which they use more frequently.
Yeah.
At least you get like a health bar for your bosses. At least there's that.
And you get a health bar. You get a pretty refined health bar for yourself. It counts you down from 100.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. You know your exact damage.
You don't get any continues in the traditional sense. They call them continues, but the continues are basically your lives.
Yeah, you respawn. And you can respawn as whomever you want, but not that it even really matters, because they all do the same thing.
Yep.
I can't tell any difference between Nighthawk's attacks compared to Spectre. Or wait, what? Is it Spectre? Spectre's the name of the guy?
Vision.
Yeah. Both esoteric names for ghosts. So, they all seem the same. They all have that same projectile. Do you want to talk about the one time we kind of did have a little bit of fun?
Yeah, the one tolerable part of the game. It's where the characters who can fly, Vision and Iron Man, will start flying, and the characters who cannot, Captain America and Hawkeye,
get a little motorbike, give them the Scooty Pop Junior.
and you fly around. It becomes like a side-scrolling shoot 'em up game.
Yeah,
and. I mean, it's fun enough. There's nothing really too intricate going on, but enemies will fly at you, and you can shoot them with your projectiles, because it takes away your punch. It takes away the worst part of the game, and you just kind of spam your special attack over and over, and you can't jump anymore. It doesn't do anything, and you scroll along and shoot enemies that come at you, and the game is boiled down to such a simplicity that it's hard not to have fun.
Yeah, it's kind of cool, and you can just spam the attacks as quick as you can. So, and since attack and punch do the exact same thing underwater, or it's underwater and in the air. They just kind of put you in this mode.
Yeah.
You just double tap it, so it keeps spamming attacks.
Isn't
it cool how the Nighthawk can shoot arrows underwater?
Yeah,
like underwater. That's how bow and arrows work.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, there are huge leaps of logic. There aren't really, really particularly funny animations, which is, I think, one of the redeeming parts of Battletoads and Double Dragon, is that, the toads will eventually, like, their eyes will pop out, their jaws will drop really wide open. There's kind of silly stuff that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And this, like, there's some funny little character poses. Yeah. Like when Vision is flying, he looks a little bit. He
winds his cape out and even when he's underwater, it's ruffling in the air.
Yeah, of course, that's also how water works.
Yeah.
The voice acting, the little voice trips, same exact voice. It's the same exact ones for every character.
At least they're saving space on that cartridge
they're saving space, but there's still load times on the cartridge.
Oh my god.
The bar was not very high for an Avengers game back in 1994, but goddamn. Yeah. They really dropped the ball. Adam, do you have anything else to say about
they're better alternatives? Sure. I think you know the exact title of it, but there's a X-Men game. It's like Gem something.
Marvel and the War of the Gems.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, that one I think might be coming up Sometime soon I'll consult my list really quick. But yeah, there's that one. There's a couple of X-Men games.
There's a good Spider-Man game that does a really good job of using the web. Like, actually getting to... It's like Bionic Commando or something.
Separation Anxiety, I think, is the one. Or Maximum Carnage, maybe. Mm-hmm. But as oh yeah, Spider-Man and Venom, Maximum Carnage. That one's coming up later this year. X-Men Mutant Apocalypse. That's the one that's first. War of the Gems is later.
So yeah, there's some really good takes on this kind of game. I mean, even like I'm gonna go back to it again because I bring it up every once in a while. The Power Rangers game does a really good job of being a side-scrolling action game.
Yeah, that one is a masterpiece compared to this.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Because when you walk up to someone and punch them, you can do it multiple times.
How about that? You can do it times.
You don't have to run away.
Yeah.
So, I guess that's all really I have to say. I mean, God, if you're morbidly curious, you can find this for like $5 on Amazon. So
yeah, again, just don't see why you would.
Yeah. Mm. So, it's so weird to see, and I bring this up a lot when we talk about things that make Super Nintendo games next gen a leap over the NES. It's strange to see what the disparity between well-made Super Nintendo games and poorly made Super Nintendo games. It's so large. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's the same with current consoles, more modern stuff, but you just don't see as much of it. It doesn't get as much attention when a game is just total shit gravy. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they'll at least look competent. This doesn't even look.
Well, if anything, I think there's a lot of fun being had with bad games. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of games that are just intentionally poorly made. In the same way that Snakes on a Plane is supposed to be a bad horror movie that people enjoy for the sake of it.
Sure.
So is like fucking Goat Simulator. Like, it's intentionally a poorly made game.
Yeah. Avengers.
I mean, there's a self-awareness, I think, that probably didn't exist when...
Captain America and the Avengers is not poorly made, but we were laughing pretty hard at it.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a lot of silliness going on.
It's good for a chuckle.
So yeah, if you're morbidly curious, you can find it. It's not hard to find. It's not expensive, but I'd go ahead and say pass.
Is this not the sort of thing that's going to find its way in the Wii store?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, before we close out the Super Nintendo show, following any of the Boston Red Sox baseball?
Not
goings on?
Really? What is going on? Is it spring training right now?
Spring training should be starting in a couple of days.
And by the way, I'm the one that's supposed to get us on these Boston Red Sox. I'll allow it this time.
Well, I figured we've only been going for 20 minutes. We can spare another 5 or 6.
Absolutely. So let's talk.
So, yeah, I mean, spring training is the time for positivity. And I'm feeling pretty good about the team. They, you know, didn't re-sign John Lester, which is a shame. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see him return. But instead, they focused a lot on offense. Mm-hmm. They signed Hanley Ramirez, so he'll be back in a Boston uniform. Yeah,
that's cool.
Yep, he'll probably be playing in left field. I think they signed him for 4 years, so that'll probably close out his career. They also signed Kung Fu Panda, Pablo Sandoval. His name almost escaped me.
Okay.
Two-time World Series.
Nice.
Winner with the San Francisco Giants will be playing third base. Those are the two really big offensive acquisitions.
It's kind of funny you bring this up because maybe it's 2 weeks ago, I would say, I rewatched the last World Series they won.
In 2013, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it was kind of crazy too because, you know, there was a point where Ortiz was just like batting 600.
Yeah.
It was disgusting.
Yeah. He was raking.
Yeah, and there was even, like, it could have even been a blowout because there was that one wonky play on the third where it was an obstructed call coming in from third base to home.
Yeah.
And had that not been called, we could have easily seen a 4-1 5-game series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, Ortiz coming back too?
Ortiz. Yeah, from EDH. Shoot, I don't remember if he signed his extension. It must have been just after the season ended.
Yeah. Pedroia, he's back too?
Yeah, Pedroia's back. And we'll move over to the outfield as soon as we're done talking about the infield and Ortiz. But Ortiz, he got extended, I believe, through 2016 with a club option of 2017. And by then, he'll be over 40. So I think it's just kind of implied that that'll be the end. But I think what's happened is they signed Sandoval to 4 years, and when Ortiz is done, he'll probably move on over to designated hitter. And they actually just signed a Cuban prospect, a really highly touted Cuban prospect, who maybe they're hoping to move over to third base once Sandoval moves the designated hitter and just kind of keep the chair rotating like that.
Nice.
But as far as the infield, they're pretty set. Mike Napoli is back at third base. It's actually first base. A contract year for him. So, I don't know.
I think he might get a lot out of him.
Yeah, they'll probably get good production out of him, but they also have a pretty highly touted prospect in Garen Cecchini, who I think they might try out at first base in AAA mm-hmm. for a little while to see if they can move him over and not re-sign Napoli. But they're a little bit, when you start moving into the outfield, they're a little bit cluttered because they got, of course, Hanley Ramirez, who they signed. Mm-hmm. They still got Shane Victorino, who will be back. They have Alan Craig, who can play both outfield and first base. And he's a guy that there's been speculation maybe he'll get traded, but it'd be a real selling low on him because he had kind of a down year. And the general consensus is that he's better than he was last year. So when they traded John Lackey to the Cardinals and got him and Joe Kelly back, the thinking was that he'd be able to bounce back and have a better 2015 than he did 2014. So it'd be a strange time to trade him, but then they also have Daniel Nava, who's a good guy who can fill a lot of roles and get on base. Mookie Betts is a highly touted prospect who did really well when he moved up to the majors last year, and he'll probably be seeing a lot of time in center field. Rosny Castillo is a guy, a Cuban guy they signed last year who they expect good things out of. So they have like 5 or 6 outfielders and not enough spots for them all. So
is that the sort of thing that would be best converted into like a bullpen?
Maybe.
Like get some more pieces in pitching?
Yeah, maybe. But it's hard to know who they would trade because they're not I don't think they're willing at all to trade any prospects or young guys for bullpen help. And the guys who would be movable, the older guys, they'd be selling low on them. So it's a weird situation because Alan Craig had a down year. Shane Victorino missed most of last year, so you don't really know what you're getting out of him. So, yeah, there's some congestion in the outfield, which, they'd be dealing from a position of strength. So if they could get some bullpen help, that would it definitely wouldn't hurt. So their bullpen is... God, it's so hard to predict bullpens. Yeah. So, they re-signed Koji Uehara. So they have the closer, and they still have Mujica, they still have Tozawa. So they got some pretty solid guys in there.
Who said they lost Lester?
They lost John Lester, mm-hmm. their ace starter. But the bullpen is so hard to predict that they start the season saying, oh, their bullpen's going to be great, it's going to be awesome, and they turn out to suck. Yeah. It's just way too hard to predict that sort of thing. But their starting rotation, they dealt Lester last year and didn't re-sign him because he was a free agent. They dealt John Lackey last year, and they dealt Jake Peavy last year, who then re-signed with the Giants. So the only pitcher they have returning from last year who started with the Red Sox last year is Clay Buchholz, who was injured quite a bit last year, who seems to be kind of up and down with injuries. But when he's good, he's really good. They got Joe Kelly from the Cardinals last year, who has predicted that he will win the Cy Young Award. So, I mean, if he can...
Well, that's a bold proclamation.
If he can, good for him. We need it.
Did you get a tattoo on his forehead? Just because he's
they acquired Wade Miley from the Cardinals, the Diamondbacks, who was Rookie of the Year a couple of years ago, Rookie of the Year pitcher.
That's
so amazing. Yeah, and he's a guy who pitches a lot of innings. They signed Justin Masterson, who started his career with the Red Sox, who had kind of a down year last year, but they're hoping that he returns to some
back
productivity.
Back in familiar territory.
Yeah, because he actually was with the Red Sox years ago, and they traded him to the Indians when they acquired Victor Martinez.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, he's been away for a while, and God, now I'm totally blanking on their fifth starter. Mm-hmm. Shit, it'll come to me after we close out the show.
Well, and how does the rest of the AL East look like they're doing in coming into this?
Middling. It seems to maybe be a congested division this year. I don't think anyone's expecting anything out of the Rays because they dealt a lot of their key players. And
Orioles,
the Orioles are solid. They didn't get. I don't think they got any better because they lost a couple of their bats. And one of the guy, Chris Davis, missed a lot of last year. They're not really sure what they're going to get back from him when he's back. Their pitching staff is the same, which was very productive last year. Toronto is also a pretty solid team. They'll be in the mix. I would like to predict doom and gloom for the Yankees, but they always seem to overachieve. I hate them so much.
Yeah.
Well, last year they should not have won 80 games. Mm. They were just in shambles. But fucking Joe Girardi was able to put a winning team together. I hate that guy so much too.
Yeah.
So, A-Rod's coming back. Who knows what they're going to be able to get from that guy?
Did you see his handwritten letter? It's really nice of
him. Written in cursive. He dotted his I's with hearts. Yeah, it was cute.
Yeah.
whatever. God, I love that they're going to have to deal with that train wreck. It makes me really happy.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah, I think that the Red Sox can be competitive. I think a lot is hinging on the pitching staff to see what kind of production they can get. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think the offense will be solid.
But even that team is going to generate a lot of runs.
Yeah, I think they'll generate a lot of runs. And they got a good shot. Mm-hmm. They got a chance to return to the winning ways. Because
in spring training right now?
I think it's, well, by the time this posts, I think we will be, but spring training, I think, starts the first week of March, so.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we'll be getting right to it pretty quick.
Nice.
So, I think that will bring this show to a close.
Mm.
Next up will be the Pokemon show, which we're going to record in just a second here.
Pumped.
So, yeah, we're going to start our fifth generation Nuzlocke discussion. And then after that will be the mini show and the Super Nintendo show. We'll do another one in March because I shouldn't have closed that file. But the big one for March is Super Metroid.
Oh, that's a fantastic game.
Well, which would be really fun to talk about.
Do you have a cartridge of that?
I don't. They're expensive. Oh, they're 40, 50 bucks.
Okay, yeah. that's pretty rich.
I do have it on virtual console. Okay. So we'll be able to get some of it in there. But, and then we'll close out the show, of course, with the official show, as always. So, actually, this show will post in, here we go. Going behind the curtain again.
Yeah.
I posted the official show for February today, March 1st, when we are recording this show. We'll post this show a few days after that, because we didn't do a Super Nintendo show in February, just kind of make up for it, we'll post it quicker. And then the Pokemon show, I will probably post by the 6th or 7th, and then try to get back into a regular rotation again. So,
yeah.
We should be back with the Pokemon show in a few days, according to how you're listening. So until then, everybody.
All right, later.